Yeah, so I'll just give you a quick history of the Oscars data set, at least in our department. I found this fairly soon after he had done the article by Pardo. I found it fairly soon after that. And so I just used to show it to students as a way to do conditional logistic regression. So it was a very nice example. And then Andrea got the idea, well, why don't we make it a contest? And so for the last 10 years, so I think we started with Pardo's data set, which probably is not the greatest data set for this sort of thing. But at least Pardo did it, and I don't know how he scraped the data off the internet and so on. And then he's kept going, but he hasn't shared the new data sets with us anymore. So he's been adding every year himself and publishing his own predictions, but he hasn't told us anything more. So we took his data set as the base, and every year we added 1 year of data. Right? Last year we put in last year's winners, and then we put in this year's covariates, and then people fitted away from there. But I think it is a lesson that when we crowdsource data, when everybody codes independently without agreeing first what we're doing, and we don't know what he did because his descriptions are terrible. I asked my wife, what does this mean? You know, and how many nominations is it? The Oscars, is it everything? I don't know. So I think
the abbreviations.
Well,
he's
terrible. He's
not like intuitive.
He's a mathematician, and so you know, we can't. I guess I could go back and ask him, but yeah. So we're kind of stuck with that. And in fact, just to give you a sense of it. I think the first year we did it, maybe the first year, anyway, what's his name? Maxim Turgeon. He's now out at, as a statistician, biostat out at Saskatchewan. So where's his blog? Is this his blog? No. No, that's not his blog, but he has a blog. He has a, yeah, this is it. This looks like it, yeah. So he's teaching now biostat out in Manitoba, but where's his home? About archive? Come on, he's got to have the thing about the home. Come on.
Archive, maybe.
Ah, here he goes. Oh yeah. So he is right. He says he started this with Andrea's course, and in fact the year he did it he was the only one who got all four right. But he says, but so he talks about that, yeah. So then he got things are wrong with the data, I think, as well. But there's also, as you said, there are other things we don't know about, like how much money Netflix is spending to try and get their movies on the top and so on. Yeah. So he hasn't done, these are the ones for last year. So I'm going to email him because he's a fanatic. He says, this was the most fun project he ever had in his life in McGill because he said, I'm crazy about movies and I like statistics, so how could you do better than that? So he talks more about that further down, I think. And but it sounds like he's scraping the data. I think he started over again, I think himself. And he probably ditched all. I'll have to ask him what he's using. Would he share it with us for next year? Because I think it's probably a sharper set of data. And he probably dropped all the extra ones that don't matter. But I'm not sure how he's doing it. He is doing a separate ones for each of the four, I think. Yeah. But I think he's putting a lot of weight on these. See? He's putting a lot of weight on these other award ceremonies that come before. He was convinced that those are the key to everything. That if they're winning in these earlier competitions, they're probably going to win. And I don't even think... Have we got this in the data set?
No. Yeah. BAFTA would have.
Oh, you do?
BAFTA is, and also the different... Like the DGA, I think, is in there too.
Yeah, the FGA.
There's some smaller awards. Okay. There's New York Films.
Well, I know. Yeah. Pardo is... He's trying to save his fingernails for typing. He doesn't add extra... wear down his fingernails typing. He doesn't... Yeah. That's fairly standard math stat kind of way to do things. Instead of spelling out the name of the variable properly. So they're not great. But still, it's a start. Yeah. I'll tell you what I did last year. I was in Andrew's competition last year. I didn't do any of this. I went to Las Vegas or to one of the bookmakers, and I said, where's the money? So I was going to go where the money is. To me, that is the wisdom of all the crowds, if you do the money, right? So anyway. Okay, so that's... But anyway, if you look up Maxim, wherever he is here, I think we'll get a hold of him next year. In fact, he'd probably be happy to join in. And be, you know, but I'm sure he's way sharper than us about it. Yeah. Anyhow, okay. So where were we? So this is amazing, though, the crowdsourcing we did do. It's a great system to have, but as I say, I wish the variables were better. His code book is terrible. Yeah. Andrea tried to fix it, but I don't know if she did. She was guessing as well. Anyhow, let's see. What I want to do is the fitting. And I think I'll only do it in R itself, because I don't want to do the markup thing. So just to show, the biggest thing I think you're going to have trouble with is how to get the predictions themselves once you fit the model, right? Isn't that right? The fitting of the model is just adding more variables, right? Mm-hmm. Whatever, and how we represent the variable. Do you represent nominations as a continuous variable, or in categories, or logs of it, or, you know, those are all things about how you represent the x's, right? But other than that, it doesn't look different than a regular logistic regression, does it? What you didn't realize, or what you don't realize, or you do realize, is that the likelihood is being done by comparisons within every risk set, within every competition. So that's what makes it complicated then, because normally in logistic regression, in regular logistic regression, when you're finished the logistic regression, you have something called fitted values. If you do fit, and you get fitted values. So I'm curious here what the fitted values are, but I don't think they mean, if they're even there, they may not mean the same thing. So that's why we need to understand that. All right? So, where was it? Where was I? Oscar's, I think, isn't it? Oscar's data set. Oh, yeah, here. So I haven't opened this since in the last week, so we can tidy it up now. But the beauty of this now is that we can go directly to that file, right? And read, I mean, I'm trying to do this with all my teaching files now, is read the data file directly off the web, so there's no issue of will it be there and won't it be there and so on. I hate that stuff where you got to have the data set in your directory. So let's see if this works now, and we'll see. Oh, good, yeah. So it looks like we now have, hold on.
Oh, you just didn't have your L in the library.
Ah, so that won't work, so I have see?
An I variable.
Not alone that. That then means the DS refers to the last data set I was using, which is dangerous. Yeah, exactly. So, good, okay, so where are they? So there should now be this many records, almost 2,000 records, yeah, one per person or movie. So the unit is either a person or a movie, right? It's either a director, actor, or a movie. And some cases the movie is there twice in two places, right? That was another thing. Pardew is doing something very complicated. I think he's using one big model that's sharing information between movies and actors, and I don't quite understand it. I think he's probably trying to save on parameters instead of fitting four separate models, right? With no shared parameters, he's sharing something. I think he must be saying that certain variables are helpful for whatever. But then I see he has a bunch of product terms, like movie time something. I think that must mean that, well, then he's allowing things to change or something like that. So that's it. So I think we're up to date. Competition, I don't think we need anymore. The one thing you're going to need for sure, though, if you did, if you ignored which of the four it was and just, oh no, you can't, no. You have to make sure that you have the risk set identified. So when I do it, I just use year, because that means when I say the year for actors, that's unique, right? It's 2010 actors. There'll be five people in that list. So I got to make sure that that's right. Yeah. So there needs to be some variable here that you can use as the identifier or the splitter between one risk set and the other, or one competition and the other. So I think I used year in the end. I had a feeling that he might have been using competition.
Yeah, competition.
Is that right? Yeah, he was trying to use that as the unit. Yeah, but I don't think it's up to date. And whoever has numbered them, I don't know where they got the competition number. They're very strange. Did you figure it out?
Yeah, but if you use it's actually unique back to other whole data set. And this way you
can. And are they all unique?
Yep.
True. Okay, but then we can make up some unique ones for this year if you need it. I just use year because I wasn't sure. But thanks for that. Yeah. So there's the data sets. And the good thing, when I do things, by the way, sometimes when I'm reading in, I don't have to hear because it hasn't done it. But lots of times R decides to make factors out of things, and I hate it. If it finds character variables, very often it says, oh, that must be a factor, and do it. But there's an easy way to do it, and you say as is equals true, and it says just take it in directly. As is equals true will stop it from being a factor. You would think sometimes a factor, you can get back to the levels themselves without the factor, but it's messy. I don't know what it's doing internally. There's a whole machinery from once you decide something as a factor, because when you make a factor, you're basically making indicator variables or extra dummy variable columns, if you like. Yeah. Why is age, is that the age of the actor?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I guess that's not there if it's a movie then.
Yeah.
Is that it? Anything else? Do you know these guys? I thought he's dead. Is somebody keeping up?
I had to Google, what is this?
It's a guy, they used to, I remember 30 years ago, they would have one thumbs up, two thumbs up. He used to do them on TV.
Yeah.
He would review them, remember?
With Siskel, yeah.
Huh?
Siskel and Ebert. And
yeah.
Siskel died.
Oh, it's Siskel. Oh, okay.
But then Ebert also died.
Yeah, but somebody's keeping it up, right?
Yeah. But Ebert still lives on.
Is that right? And then there's something about he had a famous way he would, how many stars he would give at the end, something like that. So he's kind of well known in the, and it's not so long ago. Beside my TV at home, I have a big book. That thick. Why do you think it is? They had a book with all the movies rated. Yeah, like it was. I think it was them.
Yeah, they were duos.
That's how they made their money. They had this book, and it had a little synopsis, right?
Yeah.
And then like how many stars or something like that. So that's how I know them. I knew them, and I guess I know this is. Where's the other one? There was another one. The last one is the IMDb rating.
Yeah. Yeah.
And early on, you'll see early on in it that he has this one. It actually has a whole lot of decimals. Like early on, for some reason, he had a whole lot of decimals that he scraped off the web. Now you only see 9.1, 8.2, right? Something like that. But early on, he scraped more. And I found out, I did look up that to see was it really that, and he said that, or IMDb said, they're waiting, they're not going to tell people what the weighting is. It's a weighted average or some kind of thing, and the reason they wait, you can probably close it down a bit for the noise.
I thought that the rating is like based on, because people do write reviews.
Huh?
So like it's based on that, like people's...
I don't know whether everybody can do it or not, but be careful there, yeah. Okay. That people were cheating and doing multiples.
Oh.
So they have some system for catching these,
okay.
And they're not willing to tell people mm-hmm. what they're doing, I guess, to try and somewhere else. So they're a little bit certain. That's what I saw.
It's also they're like owned by Amazon now. I think Amazon owns IMDb.com.
Aha.
And Amazon has its own streaming service too with its own content.
Oh, I see.
So it's
like doing content. Yeah, yeah. Anyhow. So all I did then is, and you can do it very differently. This one is important though, because it's better to, they have win is one and two. Win is one, I think, and two is not win. And they have zeros there, so this year's are still zero.
Right.
So I left them at that. Now what I was hoping to do, but I didn't figure out how to do it, maybe I will before in the day. You're going to fit based on all the ones from last year back, right? And then you use this year's as the new covariate. So it's like in a regular regression, you're putting in a new x and you're getting a prediction for the new x. That's the way I think of the regression, right? When you do regular regression, or even logistic regression, it turns out, and this is a trick I learned from Andrea, you learn from younger people, you don't need to keep them out separately. You can leave, let's say y is missing. In a regular logistic regression, let's say y is missing, what's going to happen? It's going to get kicked out of the likelihood, right? Because y is missing for sure. Or if an x is missing as well. But if y is missing, for sure it's gone, right? But when it makes fitted values, does it need the y for the fitted value? No. The y hat is just the linear combination of the betas and the x's. Right? So Andrew told me, Jim, you don't need to do anything. Just leave the ones you predict, you want to predict, leave them in the data set, but put their value to missing. A lot of people would say, hold out one, or I want to add a new variable and put the x in at the bottom. And is that how you learned the regression? Maybe not, but anyway. But now you see you can leave it in. But I don't know with this one. This was quite fussy, so I had to be careful because it complained if I had y equals 0 or something else in there. So you want to make sure that there's no, it's missing. The y is missing for those. But you could probably just put it to missing, and then that data, that year will not be there. But then what it'll help is when you want to make the predictions, certain things will be calculated based on the x's for every row. And then all you got to do is figure them out. So when you see my code, I think I had to do the data set twice. You'll see here, I kicked out here anybody who I didn't know whether they won or not. So I think you could leave that in, leave the winning as NA. That means when fitted values are done, it'll do that. They're the ones you want. Right? The fitted values of what you want is for this year. So I didn't do that, and you'll see what I did. So So here now, where is this?
You removed the ones with no, like, I removed this code. Oh, okay.
Well, I put them as 1 and 0, and then I set these to, I put these to NA, yeah?
Yeah? Oh, I know,
but yeah. But if we do it here now, it looks to me like, is this right? Yeah. So I have this many winners, this many losers, and the 24 NAs are basically the ones for this year. That we don't know. We're trying to predict them. So I think you can probably leave them there. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure logistic won't even touch them because it can't. It has an NA, so they're not going to get counted. Right? And then that would be better than my system, which I realized later. So, okay, so that's that. So now I just wanted Ebert or whatever it was and a couple of others. I wanted, I didn't even do that. I took the IMDb, just as, this is the IMDb rating, WR. So my data set now is much simpler, right? And the other thing I found is that there should be one winner in the comp. And this is, I guess, male actor or something? I'm not sure which it is. Person. It's the picture. That's right?
And there were two winners, yes.
There are two winners according to this. Mm-hmm. But again, this is a matter of work now. By the way, I used Siri a few times. Ask Siri. And they, Siri is dangerous. I asked her how many nominations the Little Women or Irishman mm-hmm. got. Yeah. I said, yeah, you can do it. Here. Siri, how many Oscar nominations did Little Women get this year?
Little Women was nominated for 6 Oscars, including Best Costume Design, Best Adapted Screenplay, Best Picture, Best Actress, and Best Supporting Actress.
Oh my God, that's creepy.
Can you ask?
Well, it's going to be do the logistic regression for this year.
Can you ask who won in
1928, who won the best? Yeah, I think there was only one. I think there's a mistake here, but I might be wrong. How do you do it again? Siri? I have to start again. I'm not sure how you do this. Siri, who won?
Yes.
Sorry, Siri. Who won the... Who won the picture? Oh.
It's mine.
Start again? Do I have to start again? Siri, who won the...
I didn't get that. Could you try again?
You can just start with the question.
Instead of calling her Siri.
Who won the Oscar for Best... Which movie won the Oscar for Best Picture in 1928?
You need to click the...
What do I click?
As long as it looks like it's...
Anything here?
The shiny one.
Oh, that'll start again?
Yeah.
I'm not sure I understand.
Okay. Which picture won the Oscar for Best Picture?
But first you'll need to set up photos.
All right, leave it. You guys are much faster than me at this. My kids know how to do this and I don't. Yeah, anyhow, I'm just saying. Yeah. So... This is the data set I have then that we're going to look at. But two is okay. It turns out you can have two winners. In conditional logistic regression, you can actually have two winners. Are two tied people who died in a risk set. And in fact, in survival analysis, we have a way of getting around that. When there's a big number of ties, it gets complicated because now they look at all the pairs. So if there's 5 people and 2 win, 5 choose 2 is whatever it is, so they have to go through more combinations. So it's the probability of these 2 winning over the probability of any 2 winning. So the likelihood gets to have as many terms as their pairs. And then if that gets very big, they have some approximation they can do. So in the Cox model, you're actually having to tell it, how do you want to handle what they call ties? Ties here means 2 people died at the same day, but here it means 2. Something good, 2 people won, right? But anyway, it's so rare that it's not going to make a big difference. But if it was a big, big one, and there was a... It's like having a case control set with 2 cases and 100 controls. You know, and if you have 10 cases and 100 controls, the computing gets very complicated. So that's what's going on. So why did I check that? Oh yeah, I put that point. Yeah, so I don't know, and again, this is where... I did this for a reason, to order them, because what I found out is when the fitted values came out from saving the linear predictors, it saved them in a different order. And I think the reason for that is it saved them in time order, year order, because I use year as the indicator, right, for the set. Normally in survival analysis, what indexes the risk set. What is the thing that indexes the risk set in survival analysis?
Time.
It's the time. Yeah, it's the time from the time zero. So they're ordered by time. Yeah, or survival time or something like that. So, and in fact, when you think of how the thing, and the other big difference in survival analysis is people who are in risk set number 2, the second person to die, who was ever there, they were all there for risk set number 1.
Yes.
Right? So there's a very good reason to order them. First, it's a way of working out who's there. And the second reason, for those of us who are around at the beginning of the Cox model, you can save on computing. If you computed it once for their first risk set, you don't have to compute it again for their second. So there's a huge saving in computing as well from sorting them. And actually, you work from the back up. You take the last risk set, you do the calculations for them, then you go to the second last one, which means there's a few more people who are in the second last risk set, you add them, and you go forward. And then you do the iteration and you get new betas, then you start again with the last risk set, the second last, and so on, and you save time that way. Big computing time in that, especially back 4 years ago. It was a huge thing. So that's why it is, and I think that's still the case, is that they actually will sort your data set by the risk set or by time here, and that's why then when you get the predictions, they're not coming out in the order they were in the data set. They're coming out in the reverse order. Right? So in our data set, this year is the first, right? It's at the top of the file. But it'll be at the bottom of the file now because it's going forward from T, the time variable in this one, is year. So it's going forward. So I figured that out because nothing was making sense and I couldn't merge things right without that. So that's why I sorted them, right? Important because the fitted values seem to be sorted by this, at least the right side. But if you leave everything in one and don't have a separate data set, but I'm going to have to do merging now, and that's why. So that's why I order them. And now, call in this. And why are you then doing that? Well, I'm just showing you, I guess, two of them, right? PPV win, yeah. So this is my little data set just for the last 2 years' work. Yeah, so these are, this is the risk set stops here. I guess last year, in 18, there were six here and seven here.
This is just for the best picture, right?
Yeah, yeah, this is just me. I'm just doing the best picture, yeah. But you can loop over the other things, yeah. And so now here's my fit. And now when you, what I really like about R is this object business, right? So forget for the moment what the fit is going to be, what you get out of this. Just like in a regular regression, what you get out. It's very important here, at least I can't figure out else how to do it. So there's 21 things that come out. Some variance, I don't know what that is. The log likelihood, obviously. That's the contribution of each log likelihood, I think. The score, the iteration, it only took four iterations to get to the end. The residuals, we'll come to that, the means. This mean looks like it's the mean of the covariate. So this is that the average IMDb rating in my data set is 7.48. Mm-hmm. Right? So if I had more variables, you'd be getting the average of each variable. Right? Because you now know whether somebody is above average or below average. Method, exact. That actually means it's going to do the two, all the combinations. If there's two winners out of six or four, it's going to do all the pairs. That's all that is. It's not a big deal for you guys because it's not a lot of computing. The number of events, you see, they're doing this by events to them are like deaths. That's how they're thinking of this. Right? 92, there's 92 winners here. Right? Terms, leave that, I don't know what it is. Assign. I don't know what that is. Wall test, okay, that must be in the, that's probably beta over standard error, beta hat over standard error for my one variable. And it's highly significant. So even Ebert or IMDb is not a bad start. Right? Yeah. Concordance. We'll come back to that. I think that's the C statistic to know how good is your model or something like that. Yeah, like your area under the curve. The time fix variable, I don't know what that is. I guess it's time varying or something. Formula. The X levels, okay. Is that it? So where are the results? Okay, where was the beta?
So you have
the summary.
Oh, summary. Okay, so it's not there? But how does it get to, how does it get it if the summary is just applying to here, no?
I think that's the fit.
I agree, but somewhere in fit you have to have the betas. Okay, yeah, look up here, yeah. The beta.
Oh, the coefficients.
Where is it? Yeah, at the very top, 1.4 is the coefficient. Yeah, so 1.4, that's the one we want. Yeah, 1.4 is the beta. Yeah. The other one I want, that's very important, is these ones. See these linear predictors? I'll explain them in a minute, because they're the key to how to get there. When you say linear predictor, in regular regression, in GLM, what does a linear predictor mean? It's x beta 1 times x1 plus beta 2 times x2 plus beta 3. It's the key to the whole of GLMs. The linear predictor is the linear combination of the x's and the betas. And I presume if there was a beta 0 in it, that would be there as well. By the way, I don't know if any of you have done any yet, but even in mine, when you'll see the summary here, let's do the summary. Fit. So this looks like your standard logistic regression now, right? But except there's only one this, but what's missing here that you normally have? An intercept. Yes. Why is there no intercept in conditional logistic regression? It cancels out because you have e to the beta 0 plus beta 1x as the numerator, and you have an e to the beta 0 plus beta 12x for every one of the people in the risk set in the denominator. So the e to the beta 0 cancels out. Yeah. So another way of thinking of it is in the Cox model, the lambda 0 hat, the lambda 0, which is called the baseline hazard function, cancels out top and bottom. So that was Cox's famous trick of how he got rid of that by not modeling it. He says, I'm modeling it, but it cancels out, so I'm not modeling it. Right? That's what he's doing. That's the non-parametric or semi-parametric that he did. I don't want to model the intercept, right? Because that's a complicated function of time and so on like that, so I'm ignoring it. So he's canceling it. He says, you're not interested in the intercept. You're interested in the ratio, the hazard ratio. So that's what. So that's it. So this one is big, okay. And then he's giving you e to the, he's giving you beta hat as 1.4. So this is a big beta hat. Because this is already now saying, this is already a factor 4. So that's, you don't see those in epidemiology very often. Hazard ratios of 4, right, for one variable. But there's something you have to be careful about here. How can you be careful in interpreting either the 1.4 or the exponent of it? Why do you have to be careful about interpreting that? As to how big it is. It could be also very small for another variable. You could be getting a very small beta that could still be important. Why is that?
Because you're exponentiating, right?
Well, no, but even before that. Even before that. There's something else you got to look at. When you see a beta, and you're trying to judge how big it is, you could look at the p-value, that's one thing, but that doesn't tell you a lot. What else determines how important the beta is?
Standard error?
No, well, that's in the p-value, yeah, but...
Like the scale of your data?
The scale of your data, what the x is, what the beta is applied to. So, you see a lot of silly logistic regressions. I saw one once for something to do with the complications of surgery. There's a logistic function for how likely are you to have a complication of surgery. And I forget what the thing was, but anyway, there was this tiny beta, and it was highly significant. And it had to do with, the beta was 0.002 or something, but what they had is they had the weight in pounds, or in kilograms, or in grams, or God knows what. If you have the weight in grams, beta will be tiny. If you have the weight in kilograms, it will be 100. So you've got to watch scale, right? I mean, that's why, what movement do we have in stats and in psychology and other places where they have a way of kind of looking at all the betas and you can immediately tell which are the big ones and the small ones? Have you seen that? Without having to know the scale.
Scale.
You scale them, or they're standardized coefficients. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of like saying it's a beta for one standard deviation. Mm-hmm. Shift would be this. So a standardized beta. So they use them a lot in psychology because their scales are all over the place. And we, in fact, here, if you didn't know what is this a big variable or not now? Most of the movies are between 7.1 and 8.1. There's very few that are nines. There's, you know, there's a lot. So it's a smallish scale. So 1.4 is applied to a full unit, but very good movies are a 7.8 and another one is 7.6, so that's not going to, right? So it looks big, but it may not be. So this is a general regression issue as well, right? As to what we're talking about. So that's it. Any other questions on that? So this now, your set would be bigger, obviously. And you have to decide now how to represent all these nominations and anything else you want. If they're 0-1, they're easy.
I have a slightly different question.
Yeah.
If the objective was slightly different, right? Let's say we were interested in escapism.
You mean like for how strong the causal factor was or something like that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Would we still standardize? I mean, for prediction.
For prediction, it doesn't matter. No. All I'm saying is that if you're going to say to somebody, like, let's say for how important weight is, that's not just a prediction thing. It's also saying weight increases the risk, so it's an etiologic thing as well. But there, I think you'd be better off saying, look, let's talk about 10 kilograms difference in weight. Don't make it 1 kilogram. It's small and it won't make any effect. It's like saying age. Why do you put things per year of age? You can make them for a decade of age. So my fairly standard thing to do in all regressions is to make an X scale that makes sense to people when you're talking about it, right? Who cares about 1 year? Talk about 10 years, a decade. So I often say age in decades. And then, you know, you have. So it's a more a matter of how you're going to say it to people later. It's the same number, right? So it's a matter of, and I rather do it at the beginning so I don't have to do it at the end when I'm writing the report. See what I mean? That's all. So, but put it in a kind of a scale that people can make sense of. Like 10 units of blood pressure or, you know, 5 kilos or something like that. But you see people doing silly things because they're not paying attention to the scale. Okay. So now, fit linear predictors. Oh yeah, so now, one of the structures you saw here was this linear predictor thing. Did you see that? Where was it? Linear predictors. So I had to figure out what these were, because these are key to the whole thing. And why is somebody a minus here? Linear predictor. First of all, are they all linear? Here, let's do one and let's look at it.
Since it's log of there.
So let's actually look at that, and let's look at the summary of it. So I'm not sure. I don't think so.
E in the summary.
Oh boy, good. Okay. So why is that not working? Did I not fit already?
Or 3 amps.
Yeah. I do that a lot. I need Siri here for that. Yeah, I know. Yeah, so where are they? So they go between there and there. So these are linear predictors. The first thing is I see the mean is 0. So that, what does that tell me? Because remember, all my variables, my linear predictor is beta, it's probably beta 1 times x1. That's all I have. I have only 1x. So it's, you would have 2 or 3 or 4, but it's a combination of them. But mine is just beta 1 times x1. And there's no plus beta 2 times x2, but you would have. So what must it mean then? I think it means they're centering the x already. Doesn't it? It looks to me like they're centering the x. Right? And this is beta times a centered, IMDb score. Yeah, I think. So this, I'm guessing, but this is beta times it now. But the beta is positive, so they must be scaling the other. But so that's why I checked, and I think you'll see it here. Right? I actually checked this, because if you look at the tail here, I actually looked at the fitted values. So can you see here what's going on? This is the linear predictor. What did we say the overall mean was? IMDb, 7.48 was it?
Yeah.
7.48 was the mean. So let's take a 7.5. Here's a 7.5. Right? 7.48, you said? So 7.5 is 0.02 above it, right?
Yeah.
But I think it's 0.02 multiplied by the 1.4. The linear predictor should have the beta and the x, but I think it's beta times x minus x bar.
Oh.
I think. You see what I mean?
Minus the mean.
Beta times x.
Beta times the centered x.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You see?
Okay.
Yeah. And that's why I wasn't sure, because this was going to be very important for making your predictions now. Because your predictor is e to the linear predictor over the sum of those. That's all it is. So you got to know the linear predictor is x times beta. All right? So, yeah. So that's why I actually tested it here. Right? And so I took the beta times the x minus x bar, and then compare that with what I get with the fitted linear predictor. So if you do that, you see that they agree. Right? Don't they? Yeah. So just to make sure, you know, that's the beauty of OR now, is that you have all the stuff behind the scenes and you can know what you're doing rather than just black box.
So the linear predictor is like, is the balance for each of the observations? Is that?
No. The linear predictor, no, it's not the x's. It's the x's times the betas added up. It's, if you're right, it's the right-hand side of the equation.
Okay.
Isn't it? It's beta 0 plus beta 1 x1 plus beta 2 x2. It's the right-hand side that's predicting the left-hand side.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always in whatever scale, like if you're in Loget, it's in the Loget scale, if it's, or you know, something else, it's in another scale, but the linear predictor is the key to all of this. And that's the same practically in every regression, on the left, on the this side, right? It's on what you do to the mean, you take the log of it, you take whatever, and what you model as a linear predictor that differentiates one GLM from another, right? But the linear predictor part is very much the same no matter what goes on. Right? And so when you talk about the model like an R and you see them, they have a very easy way of putting the betas and the x's together and how to automate it and so on. Yeah. So that's key. Right? So now that we know that the linear predictor is beta 0, there's no beta 0 here, beta 1 x1 plus beta 2 x2, and they're centered, well, that doesn't matter. Right? Now what you want to now do is go back and fit now, right? You want to go back now and get a probability for each of those. Don't you? So isn't this what we want now? We want to go...
Yeah, we want to have probability for each of the,
we just want... Yeah, we want a fitted probability. And normally in a fitted probability in logistic regression, it would just be e to that over 1 plus that. I didn't do this right. Okay. It would be e to the beta x over 1 plus e to the beta x, right? Yeah. But here,
it's x minus
the mean. First of all, it's e to the beta, it's x minus x bar, but that's okay. He's already done that. This is the linear predictor now, right? This is the linear predictor over the sum of these over all the people in the risk set, right? So if there's 9 movies,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, there'll be an e to the something for the one over the sum of all. And then you'll have to do that 9 times, 1 for each movie, right? And they all add up. Then the probability, you can see now how all the probabilities add up. Right? So it's e to the score or e to the linear predictor over the sum of those for all the ones in the risk set. Because think of it as like, this is how many chances they have in the draw now. It's like giving them each so many tickets. The way I think of this is, it's like there's a drum now, and you, because of your good movie, you have 4 tickets in the drum, and this one has 6, and this one has 3, and you know, so on like that. And then the chance to be picked out is proportional to the number of tickets you have in the drum. So that's all the linear predictor is. So that's your job now, is to just be, or mechanics now of how to get those. And you won't, you know, you could do it by hand practically. Right, or Excel, but I mean, you can do it in R, and I'll say, sure.
And if you just find one, the independent, the individual probability for each other, then can you sum and divide it? Is it the same thing?
Yeah. The sum, they will, it'll be automatic, because you take this over the sum of all of them anyway. So each one that's in the top is on the bottom as well. Right? So, yeah. So there's 9 sums on the bottom, and then for each person, one of them will be on the top. And they're all there. Yeah, it's like multi. I mean, if you think of it here, this is on the this is the loser or the winner, and this is the other person plus this person, or the exposed and the unexposed. But here you have 9 people with different exposures instead of 1 exposed and 1 not. Because you can think of this as e to the 0.
Yes.
Think of this person as e to the 0. That's their score, and this is e to the person, the exposed person, and then that's the chance the exposed person gets the disease, right? So it's a form of logistic in a way,
so
except this is binomial, and the other one is multinomial.
So now when we use like predict function, like in...
Well, I couldn't find it here.
Okay.
Because with that prediction...
And I think the reason it's not done is the people who wrote this did it for survival. And so they're more interested in the betas and the hazard functions for a particular factor. I don't think they set it up thinking, is, you know, could you have predicted this person's chance of being the one who died at that point? I think that's why they didn't bother. Right? But here it is the central thing we want to do. So we're using it for a different purpose than usual. Normally it's just, what are the important factors that determine the probability? Right?
Another thing, like regarding like the predictors that could be added to the model, like for each of the, so we use the like choosing which variables.
Yeah, but that's a regular regression problem, right? There's nothing special about it for here, so that's the same challenges you have at any of them. How do you represent the variables? Do you put interactions? Do you put powers of things? Are you sure it's linear? I am very scared of. I saw a couple of columns there with nominations. That's something like, if Meryl Streep is in one, she's 20-something already, or something else. By the way, last night somebody died, my wife reminded me. Somebody died yesterday.
Kirk
Douglas, who was in the movie Spartacus, is the most famous one, and he was in several, he's the father of Michael Douglas. But he died at 103. And he'd been nominated many times, but never won. Turn this off for a minute.